Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl, just you and me.
Breaking up with Linda Mitchell.
Ah, you said it, girl.
Jimmy,
yeah.
Through the land, we educate, communicate, and collaborate.
We give, showing others how to live.
We care, share, we love all through the land.
Well, good evening, good night, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you're listening in from, to all our listeners globally. We're in Japan, Canada, Sweden, and the United Kingdom, and many, many other places. You are listening to Cross Country Connect. We're going to connect in here today all the way from Arkansas. We have the pleasure of having our life coach, Karen Bird, coming on with us today. We want you to get your pads and pencils out because you know you're going to get some good information here. It is a pleasure. Before we get going, her topic will be live your mission. And in order to live your mission, you must do this. I'm going to play a little bit of it for you, and then she's going to come on and tell you how to do it. Welcome in to Waking Up with Linda Mitchell.
We'll be right back.
That's right. You know, the worst mistake you can make is to give up on yourself and stop challenging yourself for fear of failure. Keep moving forward with a firm eye on the future, telling yourself, I'll start from today. I'll start fresh from now, from this moment on. And here with us this evening is Professor Karen Berg, all the way from Arkansas, to let us know how to do it and never, ever give up on yourself. Professor Berg, welcome in. How are you doing?
Hi, Miss Linda. I'm here.
I hear you.
Oh, how are things? How are things in Southern California? It's raining a lot here in Arkansas.
Oh, I know. I've been looking at it. It's raining a lot of places, floods, rivers cresting. Everything is going on, but, you know, that's Mother Nature trying to talk to us. I am so glad that you're taking out the time to come and care and share with us this evening. We love it. And your topic is Live Your Mission. Did I get that right?
Live Your Mission.
Yes.
Well, you know how we do. We take a broad subject, and if y'all listen to us talk before, you know that Miss Linda wants me to help educate because she used to sit through my college lectures, and she knows how I can ramble around the subject or an idea, and somehow together, as me and her and sort of our classroom of our minds, we find a way to learn something together. And so that's what we do with these podcasts. And so the broad idea today is about living your mission, but where I want to start, and this is the rambling beginning, but I usually have a couple of thoughts that I bring to the podcast for us to talk about. But my first question sort of out of the gate today is, and this is where my mind was going, what if every dream you ever had was wrong? Now, what if every dream you ever had, now I'm saying that to exaggerate, to make a point. It's not like every dream you ever had was wrong, but you know how we talk about the American dream. We talk about the dreams we have for our lives. We have lots of dreams for how we think things should go as human beings and as individuals going on these journeys in life. So what if every dream, or what if the dream you had for you maybe was wrong? What if it was the wrong dream for you is what I mean. So here I go. I think we dream a lot about our goals, our ambitions, and the things that we think we want or the things we think we need to make us happy. But my first real question is, why would you chase a dream? And I'm being a little hard today instead of usually soft, but why would you chase a dream? Dreams don't always work out. And I'm not trying to be negative or pessimistic. Pessimistic is just a fact of life. You can head in a direction, and bam, you hit a wall. Something happens outside your control. Something happens that you weren't planning for. Let's say it's even a life event of enormous magnitude, like a life quake, those that we talked about before on the podcast. Something, a major life event that hits you, and you find yourself at a crossroads or in some circumstances that you could never have imagined you'd be in, much less what you have asked to be in those in that situation. So we've all had these things happen. Our lives have not gone the way that we thought they would, and dreams that we had didn't pan out. So I'm going to stay in this negative space for a minute. Well, so what if your dreams didn't work out? And I'm not going to say, I'm not going to try to sugarcoat that or pour some sugar on it and say, like a lot of life coaches would, that, hey, sometimes the dreams that come true are actually better than the ones that didn't come true. But I'm saying if your dreams didn't work out, maybe we shouldn't talk about them like they should have worked out. So let's talk about what's real, not about what those dreams were supposed to be. So I've lived this long life, but somewhere through my own wanderings, you know, on the planet, I think I bought into some of those dreams, some of those things that people told us could happen. And so I tried to live my life that way. And I think that those things that we've been told, and now I'm not saying I'm angry, but I'm coming back to tell other people after many of such life experiences that maybe we shouldn't listen to some of those things where people tell us that things can be better than the things you can dream about. You know, I mean, and now I'm playing this out for fictional sort of purposes just to help people get inside my head for a minute. So let me give you my own life experience. I can't say that things in my life turned out better than the things I dreamed about. So let me give you some examples. I dreamed that other people's marriages and families were what mine would be like. Okay, that didn't happen. In my story, my 18-year marriage was spectacularly destructive. It threw together two dysfunctional adults who burned through everything they came into that came into their path, their mutually self-destructive path. We crashed and burned through for two productive California careers and numerous homestead dreams and schemes. We made and lost friends. We made and lost love. We made and destroyed the till death do us part contract. We left behind two kids. One turned out okay, I think. One didn't, but who knows? You know, I dreamed that I would love all my grandkids one day, but I'm here in a state in the mid-south, and my kids are both on the West Coast. I left that state and started a whole new life. But, you know, who would have thought my path would bring me here? And maybe I'm okay, but maybe I'm not. So those dreams of love, stability, and passion, the things I'm talking about, the dreams that we weave through our minds that we think we're going to have, those things crash through our lives, and they can cause pain. And that's not only true for a person or an individual like me in my story, and I've got that behind me now. I was spinning a little bit of a fictional tale there just to, you know, just to be dramatic. But here's what I'll say now. I'm going to speak universally. What about us? What about us? We're not just talking about me and my story about how everything didn't turn out the way I dreamed it might because based on the things, I guess, in my upbringing I thought should happen for me because they happened for other people or so I thought. But now let's go back to the universal us. Not all dreams are good. This is me philosophizing now. And I'm meandering through my philosophy, my life philosophy now. But I believe that there's a whole generation of human beings, not only the young ones, but the open-minded ones as well, who readily and humbly admit that we no longer need to chase the things that aren't really good for us. I think it's becoming more and more visible to regular everyday people that we are in agreement as humans and as a planet that we need to stop pursuing the things that don't help. Stop the behaviors and beliefs that bind us to the pacts that we did not make, the things that pull us into unhealthy habits that make us both heart sick and head sick. What if the things we thought our lives were supposed to be were not only wrong in terms of how things are supposed to work for adults, but what if the things we saw, were told, or heard, or learned to believe were wrong for you and wrong for me? So, and I wrote all this down, by the way, because I was just philosophizing. Is any of this making any sense at all?
Makes a lot of sense to me. Yes, it makes a lot of sense. I'm following. I'm getting writer's cramps over here because, you know, I got you. And when you speak, as you were talking about what if the dream that you choose was wrong, I wrote in bullet point, I wanted to ask you, is the dream yours or is it others? And you just hit on that. So you just answered my question, Professor Berry, because, you know, I believe in we, and you're saying the things that we were taught, we have to unlearn to relearn. And back again, is the dream yours or is it others? Okay, that's what I bullet pointed, but you answered it. I'm okay over here. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Okay, so thank you for, because I needed to stop because I was rambling and I didn't know if anything was resonating for you, but now, as we often do with my rambling, you bring me back into focus, and I was being very dramatic about my own personal story, which I think is something that I can't say that all the dreams that I might have had for my life came out the way I hope they would. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying let's look at what happens realistically, not the stuff that gets played up in the media or through romance stories or through movies or through, social media, about how perfect things, because if that were true, why are so many of us so heartsick and so headsick? If that were true. So something is wrong about the way we're trying to do this and the way that it gets, that we internalize things as human beings and what it does to our psyches and our bodies and everything else. So if you don't fall into the trap of trying to live the life that you thought you wanted or that somebody else told you you should want, how do you figure out for yourself what is my mission, what is my dream? Linda said it. I'm going to write it down. Linda said it. I'm going to write it down now. Number one, it's your mission. They are your dreams.
Yes.
Okay. So let's start there. So what happens when you set out on a path to do you, not someone else's version of you? How do you become more you? Mm-hmm. And you said something about you have to unlearn first.
Yes.
Talk to me about that a little bit more.
Well, going into life, back to what you said about the marriage, the la-la land, the happy ever after, until death do you part. Sometimes those marriages will create the death. Say not death outwardly, but it breaks down your spirit. It breaks down your mind. It takes you because it's not quite panning out the way that you've been taught that it should, or maybe the way that you've grown up seeing others do other things. So how do you find that mission? You have to really, really sit down and start analyzing yourself. Professor Bird, you have to, how can I put it? We have a tendency, everyone's worst over ours. So you really have to be real with yourself, go back, listen, list, and see the things. You have to try everything, because otherwise you're not going to know what's working and what's not working. You're not going to know if this is your thought or if this is someone else's thought. You have to really, I feel, learn who you are and learn your worth. And learn what you're going to put up with. You know, we get into relationships and we try to change them. You know, no, but you can't change another individual. But when you decide to make a change in yourself, then everything starts flowing, because that living your mission is living true to you, being authentic with you, and mission. When you say mission to me, through my lifetime, the things that I've had to struggle with and I've had to learn and relearn and unlearn and still learning and unlearning daily, is that a mission becomes a vow, okay? And when that vow sets in there, that's when everything comes to you. Because it's all about you. It begins and it starts with you, not by what Johnny's doing, not what that family is doing, not none of that. You can't count Mr. Jones's money. You can't do any of that. But once you set a vow, that mission, I like the topic, live your mission, it becomes you. Your mission is you. And that vow kicks in. When that vow kicks in, there's no swing, no matter what. You don't think about it. You don't ask about it. And you don't care about what anyone says, thinks, or do. You're in your vow mode. And that's what helps you continue to live that mission. See, mission and vow, two different things. We all got a mission to be here. You know, our mission every day is to get up in the morning with it. That's a mission. But the vow kicks in there. We want to keep ourselves healthy so we can continue to get up every morning. We do not look on the outside. I'm sorry.
I just want to stop you. I'm going to jump in. When you say vow, are you saying V-O-W, like V as in victory?
Yes. That vow.
Okay, I want to make sure I understood that. Yes. Okay. Because I'm with you, and that's where I was. I just want to make sure you said the word that I thought you did, because you're bringing us back full circle. Okay. So we were talking about how when you set out on a path to do you and not somebody else's version of you, how do you become
right.
more you? And you took us on that path of thinking, well, you have to unlearn kind of all that bad stuff first, and you have to learn on your own. You said you have to try everything for yourself to know if it's working or not for you. You remember how I take notes? I was taking notes while you were talking. Learn who you are. Learn your worst or what you'll put up with. And then here's where you came to. I love, you're such a genius. This is fun for me. You said when you decide to make a change in yourself, things start growing. And you mean inside and yourself and becoming more stronger and more sure of your own decisions and convictions. And then you said a mission becomes a vow. And by vow, I was thinking you were going to say commitment, but you said vow. And I know you meant commitment. They mean the same thing. When you make a commitment to your about who you are and what you believe, you're just fully you, right? So if you go through, and we talk about this every time we come together on a podcast, it always comes back to this whole theme of my life coaching practice, which is making me, called making me, this whole process that Linda and I are exploring. And if you're you and uniquely you, and you're learning and testing all these different paths or careers or life philosophies or religions or lifestyles or industries, work habits, whatever you're doing as you're going through your life and just going through your life's journey. We talked about how it's helpful to recenter and sort of stop and recalibrate. And I'm sort of saying, for my own examination and self-awareness, you know, to today's podcast, if we're talking about living your mission and recognizing that even with your best intentions for living a fulfilling life and being happy and being like living fully, and I'm not saying that just because my marriage and my family crashed and burned that it was all bad. It's just my story. I'm not making a judgment on it. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm not saying it's something you should praise or something you should criticize or something that you should feel sorry for me about. I'm not applying any judgments to my dramatic life. I'm just saying that what I'm trying to learn from all this as I go through this sort of final chapter in, you know, the phase of my life is since those things didn't work out for me, you know, I didn't have the fairy tale ending. I didn't end up getting to know my grandkids. I didn't end up living out my life till I died, you know, in my lover's arms or my soulmate's arms. I didn't get to have that long romantic version of, you know, how we thought things were supposed to be when you bond and make a productive life with another human being on the planet. Okay, at least that's what I was sold, right? That's what I grew up with, and that's what I was supposed to believe was the way my life was supposed to go. Now, thankfully, like I said, we have these whole new generations of people and different thinkers that realize that societally and in every way, a lot of those things really just don't apply, and that what makes life beautiful and what makes people beautiful is that they can make commitments to themselves that are right for them. And I'm not talking about crazy people, and I'm not talking about people who are destructive. I'm just talking about everyday regular people. So here's a couple of questions for people who might be listening and thinking about, well, am I my best self? Am I being me? Here's a question. What do I love? What do you love? Ask yourself, what do I love? Ask yourself, what drives me? Really make a list, sit down and write an assessment of what pledges do I make to myself? Things do I pledge to myself? What kinds of vows do I make to myself that I'm pretty good at keeping? You know,
mm-hmm.
what are some
mm-hmm.
things, what are some commitments that I'm sticking to like I thought I would? This is me. This is my life. This is not somebody else's life. And then another question, how can I treat myself like I would treat a friend?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm partly there. I'm talking about trying to get into that space where you're turning off the self-criticism. It's really hard to turn off. It's easy to turn on self-criticism. It's hard to turn off that mind chatter and that worry and ruminating about past events or focusing on your fears about the future, you know, those kinds of things. So there's one set of questions, I guess. What do I love me? Okay, so we said we're going to put this under the category, and we're writing this as we go, of it's your mission, they are your dreams. So what I'll post on the blog, and we come back, and you know, when you listen to the podcast, this will all make sense. But so number one, it's your mission, they are your dreams. So ask yourself these questions. What do I love? What drives me? What pledges do I make to myself? How can I treat myself like I would treat a friend? How do I turn off the unhelpful mind chatter, the self-criticism? Okay. Number two, second header that I wanted to kind of talk about today was, and we can take this wherever you want to, is this idea of remember that growing pains hurt. I'm going through a lot of growing pains right now, Miss Linda, and that's not fiction, that's real. I mean, I started this new job and I'm 2 months in, and the learning curves that I put myself in, I liked to think when I started that job, oh, I'm confident, I can do this, I can do anything, I can learn anything. But I have had a lot of that mind chatter lately saying, what made me think I could do this? Maybe I'm not smart enough to do this. Maybe I'm not persistent enough. Maybe I'm not, you know, patient enough with myself to allow myself the time I need to learn this because I don't want to. It's too hard. I've had all kinds of things going on in my head about this lovely new job simply because it is causing me growing pain. It hurts. These things are creating fear and uncertainty. They're, you know, I started reading articles and thinking about all this again, you know, like what is it that we do when we start, you know, doubting ourselves and we get that fear and uncertainty? And even though we know we've been talking to ourselves for years saying, get out of that mindset, stop trying to be in control, you know, focus on the good stress, develop new routines, healthy routines. You know, grab that fear and face it, just, you know, take it on. Mm-hmm. And all that stuff all the stuff I've learned all my life and all the stuff I've always thought and would try to teach somebody else. But now I'm at the stage of my life where growing pains hurt. And I don't know if I want any more. I don't know if I want any more happy talk about it, about all the things I could do to overcome it.
Uh-huh. When you call it happy talk. I'm listening to you. I'm smiling over here, and I know about that mind chatter, but when my mind chatter starts coming to me, Professor Bird, I change it into a foreign language, so I'm not understanding. Nothing is saying. And I switch it to another language. So it's chattering, it's talking, but I don't understand you because I have to go back and remember some of my latest teachings. When I'm making a change and trying to improve, I realize that we have to enjoy what there is to enjoy and suffer what there is to suffer, meaning that growing pains equal growth. Growing pains puff up your muscles. It's just like going to the gym, and it's not anything that's too hard, especially for you, because you're a very brilliant person. You're a doer, and I know you tell yourself, but these are things that I know. It's not too hard. It's different, okay? It's different.
I don't know. I don't like going to the gym. I don't know that I want to go through the mental gymnastics of learning a whole new industry. And I'll tell you what else. It's debilitating because the other people are so much more advanced in their knowledge and perspective and understanding of all of these topics. And so I just feel like the dumbest kid in the room. Dumbest kid in the room.
You're there.
Dumbest kid in the room.
You're there for a reason. You're feeling that way, and you're feeling that these persons have probably been in this field forever and forever. You have a jump on them because you're very diverse. You can step on this side of the sidewalk, step on this side of the sidewalk. People that have those type of abilities and those positions, that's all they know. They're going to have some hurt feet. You're not. Because you see it when it's coming, you're thinking about it, that mind chatter is talking to you, roll with it. It's different. And when we step in, you know, how can I say? I understand that don't want to work hard, don't want to change, but in the long run, all the time you're going through this hurt, you're gaining knowledge of some sort. See, we can learn from a baby. So you're the type of person, you remind me of what my grandfather told me. If you see a river, jump in it, and it's up to you to sink or swim, okay? And you know if you stop swimming, you're not going to get to that other side. So what are you going to do? So jump in the water. One thing about jumping in the water, you know that bank is over there, and it's up to you if you want to get to it. I'm a very, how can I say, thing, passion, and it fuels me. I use stuff for fuel. I'll grab a project, and I work on it, and I'm so excited about it. And the minute I complete it, guess what? It bores me to death because I'm moving on that the fuel that's pumping me out there with everything I do. Here lately, I've changed, you know, but I'm aware of that. So when I look for my fuel, I make sure that instead of filling up the tank all the way to the top, I fill it up halfway. Because if I decide to drain that tank, I don't have too much time to waste. It's out of there. So I'm listening to you, and it is a different feel. It's a wonderful feel, but you know, you already know all about it. And they're bringing it to you. With different terminology, but you've been doing it all along. You're into the research. You're working with companies, you know, building. You're about research. I was going to ask you if I could do a research project over here, is why pink paint the red. Would that be considered? So I could get in there and get some of that information. You know, I've been smiling ever since you made the change, but I know how persistent you are, how you're going to think things out, but that mind chatter. So I'm going to suggest to change your mind chatter to a foreign language, period, and keep on rolling.
It is a foreign language. Everything that I'm trying to learn is a complete foreign language. And, you know, it's funny you would use that expression because I have thought that while I've been sitting in those meetings and everybody else is speaking this foreign language, and I'm trying to understand it and learn to translate it and figure it out and become fluent in it. And as it's happening, I'm thinking, when is it going to click? When is it going to click for me? When is it going to really, because it takes so many repetitions and it takes so much Googling and looking things up, and it takes so much what teachers call scaffolding, which is here's a foundation for this set of ideas. But in order to go to the next foundation to learn and recognize and be able to truly synthesize and internalize the information of that foundational information, you have to add something to it. And scaffolding is one of those after another. So the way adults learn, and, you know, because I used to teach in the college level grown-ups, is that we have to first see some of the terminology. We have to understand some of the vocabulary. We have to practice using the words. And then there's this other step, and we use this in our marketing class together. You have to build the milestones so that you know that there's a process. I'm going to go to phase one, and then I've got to go down this road a little bit, hit phase two. And then I got to go down this road and hit this milestone. That's three. And in our marketing class, you remember those were the four P's.
Yes.
You learned like product, place, price, you know, and we did all these. And then we had the milestones. What's a value proposition? What's a positioning statement? And we did all these fun exercises, which are all meant to be mind maps to help you learn and grow and absorb and completely be able to use and prove, demonstrate, because that's what college is all about, is a demonstration of the proof of your knowledge. is that you have to get up there at the end of the class and show that you learn these concepts by teaching them to somebody else. And that is how we learn, and I'm sorry I'm being so pedantic, but, you know, I was a professor for a long time. But this whole thing that I've been beating myself up about so much so that I had to write out today's podcast, the first half of it, instead of actually thinking about it, was I've been so devastated by how hard it is to learn something new in that mind chatter that's coming to me and sort of challenging me to give up or to try to just choose something else because it's too hard. So the whole concept was, okay, if the concept was live your mission, and I'm going to try to swing this back around. And our number one main point was it's your mission, they're your dreams. How do you figure out what you love? What promises are you going to make to yourself? Blah, blah, blah. Then number two, my very dramatic way of talking about, remember that growing pains hurt. Mm-hmm. And number three, let's take up the next topic. The next topic is focusing on your strengths, because the only thing that has saved me in my 2 months of this very steep learning curve and feeling like the dumbest kid in the room, which is just not comfortable for me because I'm used to being able to learn quickly. But what I've had to do is bolster myself up by focusing on my strengths. So number three is focus on your strengths. So how do we do that? Use your strengths. Don't get hung up on your deficits, especially while you are learning. So that means you, me, anybody going through something new and fearful like this or something debilitating that makes them feel like they're in over their heads or that they don't know whether they're following the right path. So the next thing I would say is to trust what you have inside you and revisit that when you start to feel small or when you think others may be trying to diminish you because, ugh, I hate this. And Linda, you know, I hate this. I've talked to you about this before in the workplace, especially when I've worked with other women. And they may not mean to, but women tend to be kind of competitive and have this perfectionist sort of approach to their work. And so you see very driven women sometimes, and I've encountered some of them in my new job, you know, where their jobs are everything to them. And so they're very professional and they don't show any cracks, and they are a little disdainful and a little elitist towards people like me who I learn by doing, and I bumble into something and I ask lots of questions. I don't try to pretend like I know everything, and I certainly don't act like I'm perfect, especially when I'm learning. And so as I'm asking these questions, and they get disdainful in the meetings and like, oh, haven't you learned this yet? Or, oh, do we really have to take a few more minutes to explain this? Do we really have to explain this to you? I mean, yeah. Oh, why aren't you just where the rest of us are? Because we're all so much smarter than you. Catch up. What part are you not getting? And I've had men do that to me also, by the way. I have had men do that in my career. And Chris, you know who you are as you're listening to this. I've had men actually say to me, in a professional workplace, in front of my peers, I have had them say, try to keep up, Karen. So I'm saying that I have lived this life where I will just bumble into these new situations where I come in and come out and I don't really belong and I don't have a lot of depth or knowledge in that area, but I'll come in and just ask the question. And maybe everybody else sitting in the room wishes that they had the courage to ask the question, because the truth is they're all posing, they're all a bunch of imposters, and they all are fearful that somebody's going to find out that they don't know everything and that they're not perfect and they're not the smartest kid in the room. I'm watching and listening to all these dynamics in my new job, and I feel like I'm right back where I was in higher ed, you know, 18 years ago, 12 years ago, 6 years ago. I left my career of the perfectionist like 6 years ago when I became self-employed and also was teaching as an adjunct and professor. So I quit that long career where I had to put up with that kind of stuff. And then I was by myself basically and just visiting clients from time to time for about 4 years. Then I moved to Arkansas, and for the past 2.5 years, I was in the Department of Higher Ed, which is government, which doesn't have a lot of that. Quite frankly, it doesn't have a lot of that elitism and that kind of you know, try to keep up attitude. At least at the Department of Ed, it was a very forgiving attitude until the new governor came in, and we've already had that discussion where that just like ripped apart the culture. But it was very much a learning culture, very collaborative. And my experience of it was that you could learn by doing and that people wouldn't try to make you feel dumb or, you know, try to get you to hurry to keep up. But that was unusual. So then I come to this new job, love this new job, love the people. They're great. But there is the industry I'm in is science and technology. And so all of the people in that ecosystem, I'm not talking about the ones that I work with directly, but all of those people bring with them their sort of strengths. And there's a reason why they're using those strengths in science and in, you know, research and development and in changing the world. And it's their passion and it's their mission. And I'm not saying they're trying to make me feel dumb. I'm just saying by comparison, sometimes when I look at what my strengths and gifts are, I feel like I'm not, like they're in some other realm. Like they're, except I'm not talking about the mean girls. I'm talking about just the general smart people. They're really smart.
Yeah, they really are smart, but are they really? See, I said they really are smart, or they appear to be, but are they really? See, sometimes persons that are in different fields, it's just human nature, they act that way because, see, they need someone to put them beneath them so that they can feel great. That's number one. When you talk about try to keep up, I'll share a story with you. I've done the hospitality industry, and I go in, and I'm a night auditor, and I'm working with numbers and checking out. But if your desk and if your buckets are in the front and you're on that front desk, whoever walks up, you don't go get anyone. You help them. So you're doing two dual things here, right? And I had they brought in interns from different countries, and there was a manager. I think she was from Russia. And then I forgot where the other gentleman was from. But I knew my portion, but that coming into using that equipment, that epitome, that, you know, it took a minute, right? Going out, so I would say, can you show this to me again? Well, Linda, I showed you once. I said, well, you need to show me again. So evidently you wasn't too clear with your instructions. See, I whip it back on them, okay? And don't care, because if I have to do this, so persons, you're going to have the leaders. You can't, when you're in a strange land, it's going to be strange. When you say you focus on your strength, that's what we have to do. We know who we are, Professor Berg. And when people ask me, what are your strengths and what are your weaknesses, I hate that word weakness. And most of the time I tell them I don't have any weaknesses. I have some things that I need to work more on. I don't like that word. Don't bring it to me. I'm all about strength here. And if I focus on my weak, that's what I'm going to become. So when they ask that, I have to take a deep breath before I answer, because I don't believe in the weakness. I believe in the strength. So I don't really have any. I just have some strengths about me that need some more work done. And they don't really know how to answer that. I don't care if they don't like it, but that's it. So I understand where you are, but you're there for a reason. You interviewed and you got there, so it has been about Professor Bird that they need, okay? They need something that you have, and maybe it's to show them that they're not that great and they're not that smart, and it's more than one way to do things. Yeah, it's a whole lot of reasons for that, but try to keep up. If someone tell me to try to keep up, I said, I'm trying to figure out what you're riding on. Skateboard, airplane, or what? What vehicle are you using to get to that point? I'll rip it back on them. I don't take that. I won't take it because I know
where it's
coming.
Well, what's interesting, you know, well, and it's interesting. I mean, I'm actually typing down all the points you're making, because those are helping build this last section about how to focus on your strengths and I appreciate your coaching about not letting other people, you know, elevate themselves by putting you down. And also what you said some important things in there about like it there because you are new, stranger in strange land, I think you said, you know, you have to ask for directions. And if you ask for help, if you need to ask for help, ask for it. If you need help again, ask for it again. And that's one of the things that happened this week where I felt like, this is so hard for me, Linda. This is so hard for me as a professional and as someone who's been in the working world, you know, the white-collar working world, you know, for probably, I don't know, 40 years now, is that I have to go to my supervisor or superior, like not even my immediate supervisor, but the highest level person at the state level. I had to literally go in and stop doing what I had been doing and hand the work over to her, which is just like, oh, something you never want to do. You never want to have to go to the big boss and say, this is over my pay grade. This is over my ability. I don't feel comfortable speaking for the state or doing this because I'm not ready. I'm not there yet. I haven't learned enough to speak to this, and you have to do it. So that's what I had to do. And I felt so bad about it because, you know, my whole thing is figuring things out, being able to see what other people can't see, feeding them back the words and helping them get the picture in the system. And that's, I'm used to being the consultant. That's what a consultant is. It's somebody who pieces things together and gives it back to people and adds value in the way and helps make it better for them or give them a tool they didn't have before. And so this particular ask, I could not take it any farther than I already had. And I was like a deer in the headlights. I felt inadequate, but I also felt a little indignant or righteous because I had to actually take a piece of work to a point, hand it to the big boss and say, honestly, this is your work to do, not mine.
Yes,
well,
it is.
So
now if you
if I'm grateful, if I'm giving my, if I asked that question earlier about how do you treat yourself like you would your best friend, I actually had to treat myself or tell myself to do what I would have told a good friend to do, which it was so hard for me, was to admit that I couldn't do it, even though I'd like to be able to, and then to have to escalate it and come back and say, if you want this done, you're going to have to do it. If you don't want it done, if you don't want it done, then let's kill the project, please. Because I'm in over my head. I'm feeling inadequate. I cannot help the process any more than I already have. And all of a sudden, it becomes your responsibility. Do you want it?
And
so,
and
that,
it
so
was
that happened.
Her responsibility. It was her responsibility.
Well, you know, but here's the thing, Linda. I know what her life is like. I've been there long, 2 months. I've been watching. She has a lot of responsibility. She's pulled multiple different ways. A lot of times she ends up having too much pressure all together in a narrow time frame, and that puts her under a lot of work stress. And she's very kind and calm and serene and I think helpful, but I can see that there's a side of her that doesn't want to always be pushed to the next step because when they gave me the position that this person had before for 13 years, the person who had that position 13 years was very competent and didn't have to ask for a lot of help. But not only that, she did not share any of the knowledge or the document or the training or anything with anybody else and didn't ask them to co-own it with her. So they honestly didn't really know much about it. And so I'm going through growing pains, and I'm asking my bosses, both my immediate boss and the big state boss, to go through this learning process with me. And that hurt me a lot. That was really hard this week to have to go back into them and say, you hired me. And if you want to do it the Karen way, because I'm going to see and do things differently than the person who was here before me. And you told me you wanted me to do that. But that means you're going to have to come on this with me. You're going to have to co-own it. We're all going to have to roll up our sleeves. I'm going to need you to look at what's happened so far. Put your eyes on this document, improve that one, think with this one, set a budget with this one, help me understand how the budgets work so that I can learn it, you know, explain the terms and the relationships that I don't know because I haven't had a chance to develop them or be exposed to them. You can't just throw me into the deep end in this job that you said you wanted me to do. And yes, Linda, I will, like your grandpa said, if you throw me in, I'll try to swim. I'm not going to drown, but I'm also going to maybe need you to throw me a life raft or one of those little, one of those little round circles with a rope attached to it. I might need you to help me do that because you threw me in where the current was strong. You threw me in where I didn't have enough swimming ability to withstand the current. You asked me to show up at 150 miles an hour when I'm really still on my training wheels in this industry, which is not easy.
They do that, and I will say from my experience and not being negative, but that's a person that don't want to take care of their responsibilities, so they're pushing it off on you. You are what she considers the it girl. I go in the door and tell them I'm not going to be the it girl. I'm not her. Okay, I've experienced this several times because, you know, I've been dealing many, many arenas over my journey, and I'm still chatting on it. But when I just, you know, no. Because a lot of times if you don't know the process, you don't know what's happening, you're the it girl, and if something goes wrong, it's not going to fall on her because she delegated it to you. No, this is your responsibility, and don't feel bad about it. Why should you be stressing out on something that you don't even know the definition of the title? And if you have a manager, she know what the job is about. She know about the pressure and stuff. If she can't handle it, she needs to bring someone else in. But that's her responsibility, and good for you. You took it back. You know, things are not the same. Nothing is being done the way it's being done. I've talked to PhDs. I've talked to well-educated people, well-experienced people. I've experienced it myself. You know, these companies or whatever, they're looking, they want the 20-year-old, so you think, well, they just talk about age. No, they're scared of your experience. They want that puppet up in there. See, a puppet will go up in there, prove a point. Oh, can you work till 10 o'clock? And I'm going to have to leave. And, you know, we don't have a budget. That's a puppet. They look for puppets. With your experience, how can you get something done without asking questions? And most of the time I find that in that upper management or wherever, they have an attitude because they don't know the answer. Okay, but they can't let on that they do because they're in this high power title position. I just bring them on down. I say, look, sit side by side with me. If we gonna I don't read maps very well. You have to tell me to turn left at the corner where the brown picket fence is. But if they paint that fence white, I'm going to get lost, and I need some communication that brown fence that you're looking for has been painted white. So this is the change. It takes collaboration. It takes. It has nothing to do with you. It has something to do with them, period. So, we always talk to each other. You always talk to me. Nobody can demean you. Your strengths are your strengths. They belong to you. You must have answered the questions correctly to go in there. You're there. So
it's funny you'll say that because, okay, and now I'm listening. And by the way, I'm still typing and capturing some of your thoughts so I can write this later on the blog. But all good things. I want to stop on this one. You said something about, we've been talking about, like, the importance of putting your responsibility where it belongs, especially if it's not all yours to do in a new job or something, and that, you know, that we can help these organizations that we work with understand and recognize the need for collaboration because that is one of our strengths. And another important thing that I have learned in the just in feeling like the stranger in a strange land where everybody's speaking that foreign language is about the importance of asking the right questions. And so I kind of want to hone in on that a little bit before we finish this session. But
okay.
So you said something, well, you must have known the answers. No, I didn't know the answers. I only had the questions. And this is a problem when you're in a new environment and you maybe don't have the language yet, because remember I was talking earlier about the scaffolding and the need for the terminology and understanding the people and the places and who they are and what they represent and what they do and how they fit in the system and, you know, how they can help you or how they cannot help you, whether you should spend time with them and getting to know them or not, and whether they need to know who you are and you can help them or whether you should be spending time with them or not. These are all these things that we have to do when we're entering into this new ecosystem, highly developed and highly specialized industry or sector. In this case, it's technology commercialization in academic spheres, and then sometimes there are inventors out in the community who, you know, can take their products or ideas to market, but I might not be able to help them because I work with those who typically would qualify for these federal grants, and those come from like research labs, academia, and stuff like that. But anyway, it's this very specialized world of, you know, new venture startups, small business startups, small technologically enabled businesses, and the way those get funded and the way we help them grow. And that's across the board. That's, you know, that's not just in academia, and it's not just for researchers and people with in their little labs. It is also for backyard inventors. It is for people who are inventing new sort of technology-based solutions for all kinds of problems in the world, all kinds, and all diverse populations. It's across the board. And so it's a good thing in America that we're focusing on those things and that, you know, that we have some money, especially at the federal level that I've talked about, where they can put money into these small businesses to help you meet the government's criteria, which is the specialized and hard part. And so, like, you know, I haven't even really started learning all of the rules about the grants that they can apply for, and that's what's going to take a long time, in my view, because the woman who was there for 13 years became an expert, but it not overnight. And the rules are constantly changing, you know, the requirements are constantly changing. The technology itself and the topics of interest are constantly changing for over 11 agencies times umpteen magnified, I don't know how many times, all the institutes within those agencies. So ultimately, I don't even know how many granting organizations there are that can share some of this money. And then each person that wins the money has to be very responsible with their budgets and their reporting and showing how they use the money. And it's very technical. It's very, I personally would probably not ever go for this money myself because of the challenges of filling out the forms and learning how to adhere to the business practices and being so, in one way it encourages success, and another way it's that you will not fail. Because you have to follow the rules and and it's an investment with no strings attached. So they really don't take a chance giving that money to bootstrap operations that aren't convincing, that, you know, they have to be really convincing that you're something, you're someone that's going to be worth putting that money. Your idea and your thing is really worth putting something into, and that's going to solve lots of problems for lots of people. And most of these most of these agencies are not interested in small solutions, although from time to time in the ecosystem, people like me and the other helpers like me in the ecosystem supporting technology entrepreneurs, we will see those other opportunities, even though they're not ones that we can help with. But we could refer those, like if I found out about a nonprofit that invests in small, diverse, you know, small business, diverse small business owners. If I see a small nonprofit, I might hear about it and share it with my friends that wouldn't qualify for the federal program. You see what I'm saying? So slowly, there's just lots out there. So this is when I kind of wish our human brains worked, machine learning or AI, like artificial intelligence, where if I saw something once, if I was a machine learning brain, if I saw it once, I would recognize it and log it away and be able to retrieve it very quickly. But the way, because I have a human brain that doesn't quite work that way, it takes me many repetitions. It takes me a very long time to learn it. It also takes me, I have to organize it while I'm going, which means that I'm catching the information, probably collecting it and putting it somewhere so that I can find it again. And then I'm refreshing my knowledge over and over and over again by exposing myself to it again. And then actually I start getting requests from the outside world. And then I go, oh, yes, I did read about that. Let me show you where that is. Let me help you with that. So I know where to find it. So I'm this human retrieval machine. But that takes years. I think that takes years to become like the really, really helpful government employee that kind of answers all the questions. But as I'm learning, what I want to say is I think what I'm being taught is how to ask better questions to help me learn, because no one is there actually taking the responsibility to help me learn. So I'm having to figure out what questions to ask and do it myself. And that's because I'm not saying they're bad employers. It's just a highly specialized job. It's a highly specialized job, which they don't have. There are ways I can get trained, and there are ways I can get professional development, but nothing that's going to give me all the answers all that I need all the way through. I don't know how to explain it. There are lots of tutorials, but I don't learn just by watching a video. I'm not going to retain everything I see in a video. Do you see what I'm saying? So I think that's simplistic.
Things change moment to moment. Everything changes every moment. So you got this program, but then this one will switch over. Like you say, I like dealing with AI quicker, or you can hear something or refer something. They might not fall in the federal, but, you know, you can refer someone, check this out, check that out. They're given. I am not a grant person. I can package, I know, but I've always felt that when you better do what you say you're going to do. If you order 10 computers, you better use 10 computers, okay?
Yeah,
if you
that's
have
right. That's the hard part. That's what I meant. They don't give you that money expecting you not to follow through.
And most people get it stuck. That money is not for you. That money is for you to do what you say you're going to do. And there's many, many nonprofits.
When
people say, oh, you're getting a grant, I don't care for grants, because that's me working for them. That money doesn't come to you. It's good to have, and it's good startup, and you have to renew again. You have a company, and you have to reapply again. You might not get it the next go-round. That's always a worry. No. So persons, like you say, they're so strict. It's so many rules. It's so many laws. You're in the high-tech end of it. That's even worse. But I'm telling you, they got the right person in there, because you'll dig it out till you figure it out. That's you. And that's what we were taught from you. I mean, I remember how you would send us out on our fiascos, and I remember we had to set up a partnership, and what you said, oh, that doesn't have to come true. I've been spending a lot of time with this. This is going to happen. And when it happened, I sent you the photo.
Yeah,
remember?
That blew me away. That blew me away, because almost everybody else had some kind of fictional make-believe thing, and then you went out and said, no, it's going to happen, but they're going to sign this agreement. And I was like, oh, my gosh, you're mucking in their business now.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't say that you would get a grade in college to go out and mess with somebody's nonprofit business now, Linda. You challenged me.
That was the assignment. That was the assignment. And I'm going to follow through.
That's not. Nobody else did. Nobody else. None of those other teams in that marketing class went out and tried to get their nonprofits to actually start something new in the real world. They were just ideas.
I was out in the hail and the rain and riding steady transportation. I said, Professor, I've been trying to catch up with this woman for 2 months now, and this is going to happen. The CEO that was over the organization that I was a part of, said, well, can we do it another day? I told her, nope. It's happening today.
I'm on my way.
And I'll tell you the outcome.
She came to our class and gave a guest lecture that was all about her, though, which I'm never gonna forget.
But I put it back on her. But I had to show her something too. You know, it's like, uh-uh, this is happening. I got permission. I got a clearance. I got the hookup, and I made it happen. And it like and was not going to let anything stop me. And you said, but y'all don't really have to do it. I said, mm-mm, coming into fruition. And I got them all together after the agreement was done and sent you that picture immediately. I said, it's
done.
So
you have to understand. But you have to understand that's a little overwhelming for a college professor who's supposed to be, yes, it's applied marketing, and yes, there's a lot of theory underneath. We did our scaffolding. We did our terminology. We did our milestones. We did all those assignments. There's a lot of teaching and learning that goes on, but it's always scary for a professor who's inside the classroom to feel like they played some part in having responsibility for a change that happens out in the real world, because some enterprising master's degree student, some graduate student says, watch me.
Oh, yeah. That's the purpose of being there. But you see, from that class and from that assignment, I can set up many partnerships. So I took it as, I'm learning. So that happened to be one. But if there's somebody, you know, that needs to be, I'm going to hook them up. Okay, and know what to look for. But
so back to our theme of living your mission. That's probably why I stay in touch with you, Linda, because you remind me that for that little bit of time that we knew each other at the University of Laverne, I was living my mission because we stayed colleagues all these years, and that was, I don't know how many years ago, 7 or 8 years ago now, that we stayed colleagues because we found the process of learning and sharing and growing and having those growing pains together, we found that to be pleasant and fun and fulfilling. And so, you know, God, what I would give to just live in a world where, you know, I was with peers and people I can mentor or people that are mentoring me, where we're just having fun learning together, you know, and it's not so painful, and you don't end up feeling like you're the dumbest kid in the room, or you don't feel like you're too hard on yourself because you're asking somebody else to do something that's really their job. You know, those are all office politics and ick stuff that sometimes I encounter and sometimes I don't, you know, but it's all part of life. It's all part of life, and, you know, you can't get too hung up on it. And again, we kind of meandered. I'm going back over my notes. I was typing the whole time we were talking, but let's see. We started with, I asked a couple of questions. I said, what if every dream you ever had was wrong for you?
Mm-hmm.
What if your dreams don't work out? Like I was giving my story about my lost marriage and kids. What if not all dreams are actually good for you? What if the things that, what if you no longer need to chase the things that aren't really good for you? What if you develop unhealthy habits that make you both heart sick and head sick?
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, in this section, it's your mission. They're your dreams. Answer these questions. What do I love? What drives me? What pledges do I make to myself? How can I treat myself like I would treat a friend? And then under the heading, remember that growing pains hurt. We talked about putting, you know, learning curves, like the one I have at my job, can put you in pain. And if you require other people to grow with you, that put them in pain, whether it's work or personal. In that section, we also talked about, you know, not allowing the mind chatter to get through to you or have clarity. That's a foreign language that you don't want to hear. But when you're entering somebody else's foreign language, you may want to jump in and learn it and really learn it well so that you can not only stay up with the conversations in that foreign language, but learn to add value in those conversations as well. And this is true of any time you enter a new culture or any new learning curve that for something that's strange and new or that you haven't spent a lot of time in or getting to know. And what else? And so maybe I'll swing back around. I do want to add something to the end about, you know, some questions that might be the right ones to ask. Learning to ask the right questions or the questions that are going to get you the answers that help you get the directions that you need or help you get to the information that you need or help you understand what your value in that part is or what your contribution to that part is going to be. you know, learning to ask questions about people's availability and interest, because you need some collaboration or you need some shared responsibility or shared elbow grease, whatever that is in the workplace or at home. And thinking about questions that have to do with what responsibilities are really yours and may belong to somebody else, that some of the things that may be causing you undue stress are not really yours to own. That
no.
Through these growing pains, maybe you can lessen some of your growing pains by not, you know, by maybe not putting it all on yourself. So that's kind of where, as I looked at the notes, I took a sort of meandered through our thoughts. Any last thoughts about how we can wrap up this idea of a very broad topic of living your mission or dreaming your dreams or making sure your dreams are your dreams? Anything else you want to add to that?
You know, we love you so much because we go in and out and we make it real, and that's what we're about, real here. We have a few minutes. I just want to say, you know, people always say, be the best you. Well, if you don't know you, how you going to be the best? So that's a good place to start. You have to learn yourself first. Then you can, when you recognize that others are trying to put their responsibilities off on you, that others are trying to pick your brain, take your creativity and make it theirs. I deal with that a lot, so I don't talk to nobody but the sun, okay? I share my thoughts with the sun, and my philosophy is you're going to read about it because I've experienced a lot of that. And when you have creativity or you share, and the same thing in the workplace, they're getting that top salary. But most of the time, the ones that's putting it on you don't know how to do it themselves. That's why they can't answer the question. And it's up to you how much you want to learn. Do you really, like you say, you're learning the terminology. Everything changes from moment to moment. All I say is I believe in each one, teach one. And we can learn from a baby. But if you don't want me asking questions to get clarifications, you got a problem on your hand, because that's what I'm going to do. Because I can't do anything and be the best and really learn this trade or learn this technology until I have clarification. Otherwise, I'm just out here being a blind robot, and that's not what I'm here for. But that might be what most are looking for with the young adults now. You know, they'll walk off a job at lunchtime. They used to do what you call quiet quitting. Now they're doing live quitting. They'll leave going to the bathroom. You think they're in the ladies' room and they are in their car on their way to the beach. Okay, different kind of program out here. So it bases on the area that you're in. What are they really looking for? You wouldn't be in there if there was something. See, we think we're to go in and get taught. We don't understand that sometimes we're supposed to teach others, and we can't really figure it out what it is, but there's meaning behind everything. Nothing is a waste. So I'm going to say, just be who you are. This authenticity, moving from the heart. If you don't know, you don't know. And if they don't know the answer, then they shouldn't be sitting there. Okay, and take it like that and learn the trade, learn the craft, kind of get at least one word in the foreign language. If you can't get the one word, then just blot out all. Just speak English to yourself, because when you step in some places, I'll share this. I worked in wellness, and this particular company was top of the line, but they trained their people with all their products. And when you went out there and hit that to work with those guests, you knew your stuff. You knew it. And that's what I admired about them. To the point, we were working for wellness and spas and chiropractors. So if you would call me for a pedicure going to this elite place, I'd have you spending all day there. I was their top enhancer. How did I get there? Because I knew the product, because I experienced the product. I would get experiences, all of that. So when people don't want to show or don't have time to show, it's up for you to live your mission. And if that's your mission, to make that kind of switch, and you'll be very, very helpful to society learning that knowledge. You're there for a reason. And we'll talk about that off the air, but you're there for a reason. So don't feel inadequate. You are who you are. You need to ask the question. Ask the question. If they don't like, or tell them, well, They can't answer it. That's why they can't. That's why they get attitude. You haven't been in that doing that. Yeah, they can't answer it. So they get an attitude. That's their defense. But I'll bug you to death. You know, I like clarification in everything I do. I can't step out there unless I have clearance on it. Let's talk about this. So this is done. Why? I do it in organizations. I do it in my personal organizations. If something is unclear, I'm responsible for lives of other people. I just can't throw and tell them anything. And I can't flip-flop them around. I'm not messing with truth. I'm messing with people. So I'm very big on getting clarification. And most persons that know me know that. And they say I'm a troublemaker. I tell them I'm trouble with a big T. But how can you clear something or fix something or correct something and you don't know the reason? You got to have some direction. Same with you. You're not AI. And they coming in here whipping it up, but you are AI. You're AI with your own self. That's the way I look at it. You know, my intelligence is top notch out there. So when I step in an arena and the blend is not right, I don't get in that blender. I don't get in it. Come one way or let me know that you're not appreciative or let me know that you don't see my worth. Sometimes I don't worry about that. You have to know your own worth, and you just have dirty glasses. But what I love, I wrote it down, and before I go, I'm going to mention it. You said love, stability, and passion. What do you learn? What is your mission? And what is it? What do I love? What drives me? Treat myself as I would treat a friend. Okay, you have to put yourself first. Okay, you are your friend. So therefore, if you're putting you there and getting all the information you need to make you comfortable, less stressful, you that's the way you treat a friend. That's what friends. But we have to be friends to ourselves first. I had a friend to tell me, okay, "Oh, I'm going to pick you up for lunch." I said, "You know, nobody ever calls me for lunch." You know what she told me to test about? Linda, because you're always taking other people. She woke me up real quick. She woke me up. I never thought of that. She said, you don't give anybody opportunity. You're always taking them. So I was treating a friend better than I was treating myself. So that had to pull back. But on this, what do you love? And what are your pledges? That word, pledge, what do you pledge? My top pledge is principle. If my principles, I will not bend for nothing and nobody. And if our principles don't match and I see that, I got to go. I don't care where I'm stepping from. Never, ever bend your principles. You're intelligent. You're an organizer. You make things happen. No matter what someone tries to make you feel like, just whip it back on them. Those are your principles, your standards, your values. That's the way you work. Again, we can't walk in nobody else's shoes, and they can't walk in ours. So I go back to the question, is the dream yours or is it others? Like you said, like we started off, very, very, very good explanation. Most people want you to live their dreams. You have to live your own. And in order to live your own, you have to experience many, many ups and downs. You have to go through many, many painful crises. But pain equals growth. And if it's a day you spend, a year, 10 years, things change the moment to moment. So that lady that was there for 13 years, her crap ain't going to work no more because that stuff has changed it. You're coming in as new blood. And because you see it that you see, you're going to make those changes happen because you're not looking at it the whole way.
Well, in truth, I very bluntly said to the big boss this week, and well, concluding on what you just said, was the girl that was here for 13 years before who was so competent and was so good at her job and so many things for this organization. When she left, because nobody else knew what she did and she was such a silo, that nobody can benefit from that 13 years of intellectual property. Her very own thing was protected. She took it with her. And isn't that ironic? You know, she's in the business of of growing intellectual property and helping it blossom, and she was an expert at that. But then the minute she walked out of that, all of the relationships and all the skills and all the knowledge and all of the job aids walked out with her, because, and she didn't leave anything behind. She didn't create any systems. It was just what she did. And so I'm the person who comes in and starts trying to build systems. Okay, let me try to backwards engineer what this very successful person took 13 years to learn and do, so that if I ever leave, there'll be a system in place. And not only that, the other people in this place will not let me operate in a silo, nor will I let them operate in this silo, because we are going to collaborate and we are all going to learn this together. And not only that, you're going to co-own some of the responsibility for it, because, and I'll build a system and I'll carry out the work, but I'm going to need your help, because I'm not an island, and because you hired me and you don't want to set me up for failure. You don't want to throw me into the current or the deep end without any tools or support. And I am going to come back and remind you that you need to help me swim, because you brought me to this damn river. And I said I could do it, and I had a lot of confidence. But your confidence will only carry you so far when there's more to learn and there's more to know and there are more nuances that anybody can, any even smart person with training, came in prepared to do, because the job is just complex. Now, I don't want to sound like a victim. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining. I mean, there is a part of me, my mind chatter has said maybe I oversold myself and I should just resign or go find something easier to do, because I don't want to fail and I don't want to embarrass myself and I don't want people to watch me struggle while I'm learning. Maybe I should just, maybe I did bite off more than I could chew. But there's, I guess I have a certain pride and a certain stubbornness that is saying there is more one way to do this. And Linda, if you said maybe there's a reason I'm there, if I say anything, I would say it's because the person I am will teach them how to be more collaborative. The person that I am will teach them how to create a learning environment where everyone is encouraged and you're not ashamed to ask or made to feel fearful because you might make a mistake. And the person that I am will come in and say the state of Arkansas will benefit if the different regions in the state stop doing their competitive and work together for the greater good.
Yes.
because that way it didn't get us anywhere. And I'm not saying rebuild the whole thing. I'm not saying do like some of the politicians do and come in and tear the whole thing down and try to create something from scratch, brand new, or wreck everything that's there. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if we're going to learn to work together and collaborate, you're going to have to know some of this stuff like I do. And while I'm learning it, I'm going to ask you to help learn it with me. And while I'm getting introduced and introducing myself to all these players, and I don't know who they are or why they're important to us, I'm going to ask you to be in the meetings as well and try to understand why they're important to this cause.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up. Because of that experience of that young lady leaving, taking all her knowledge and all her department, it's very imperative that when you're in environments like that, that people are cross-trained in anything that you do, whatever it is, and there's a group of people and not cutting you off. I had an opportunity with this same company. They bought in new equipment, right? And not knowing my background, not just catty, messy, whatever. So this new equipment came in. And it was so ironic because I knew the equipment, but I didn't say anything. I said, so it was set up where you cue out everything. It was just a piece of equipment, because this was like a call center, but this piece of equipment routed the call there, and you filled up the cues, right? I had those cues filled up so quick that people couldn't leave and go to the bathroom because I knew the equipment. And so I had two little supervisors. They were trying to make a name for themselves. You know, I like to work with the young adults. I don't mix that age there. I've done that, been there, but let me show you how to do it. If I'm in a room with a bunch of 22-year-olds, I'm in heaven because I like the youth and I can out-twerk them all, and we just get along fine. But, you know, they're trying to make a name. They're trying to, you know, impress and stuff. So you understand that. But if you're there to teach them, and you don't let those things bother you. So these two say, well, don't show her how to do it. And I'm just, you know, they didn't think I heard them. I was sniggling. And we need these things moved in 1.5. Oh, yeah, they just had their little routine down. So about a month later, I brought them over. I said, did you pull the reports? I said, how are we doing? Oh, we don't know how to pull the reports. Oh, you don't? I hit that button and pulled out that sheet. I said, is this 0.5 good enough for you? Then it was just like, you have to, I said, everybody in here needs to be cross-trained on this, because this is a piece of equipment that you can't spend no more than 4 hours on, okay? You can't stick a person there. It moves too fast. So it went from there to, but the idea is locked in. I say, no problem. I said, because when I fall out in the middle of the flow and you have to dial 911, I bet you it'll get unlocked. See, I knew the system, but I knew what I was dealing with also. So by you seeing that lady that had been there for 13 years, was selfish, wasn't going to show anybody anything because she didn't want them to take her little spot. Very, very selfish, but I hope the company is learning to cross-chain. Like you say, it takes collaboration. You are there. You're not going to be the it girl. Okay, she screwed it up. But right now it's coming to you like they want you to be the it girl. You're not the it girl. You're the changer. You're the one that's going to make it work. How are you going to figure that out? Not to inadequacy, not because they know, they must don't know. If they did, they would have had that department cross-trained and they wouldn't be in the situation they're in. So they don't know too much, do they? Especially about dealing with people, but you do. So we think we're going somewhere for one thing. That's might be to fulfill our dreams, if that's a very, but it's not really it. You're there for a purpose. And if you say it's too hard, I'll walk away, you'll never know what it is. So I don't know. You don't want to be stressed. But it's a great opportunity. You're sitting in a good seat because you can really help a lot of organizations, a lot of people, and look at it that way because of the knowledge that because of how you're working, what this is about, and how widespread it is. They might be on the federal restrictions, but as you mentioned, there's many, many organizations out there that may not be able to meet that criteria, but you could refer. You got the paper right there in your face.
Yeah.
You got everything you need. So while we walk away, and you're a consultant, and you're in marketing, you're there for a reason. You're definitely there for a reason. So I don't know who's coaching who today, because I'm just whipping it back on you, and I'm laughing because
you always coach me. You always end up making me feel better because I bring you all my – well, since we started this process a couple of months ago. Before that, I used to have just, you know, tips and questions, but because I was going through so many life changes these past, I don't know, 7 or 8 months probably, when we have gotten together for our podcast, you've been helping me dig it out till I figure it out, as you say. So I've been bringing you some of my stuff and telling you my stories, and we've been going through these life lessons together, like me talking about real life and my sadness and my joy and my confusion and my clarity and my, you know, my stress and my peace and my new challenges and my, you know, hopeful solutions. And we just kind of been on this journey together while I've been going through all these life changes. And I thought, well, you know, that the life coaching practice would really be about me hearing about other people's those things, because, you know, because I would be offering my door and letting people come talk to me about those things, and we go through things those together. And what ended up happening was I just didn't have the bandwidth for it. And so these podcasts are helping me process while I continue to grow. And I've had, a couple of life coaching clients over the past 5 years since I started the business. But this past 2.5, almost 3 years since I've been in Arkansas, I just really have been rebuilding my life and just haven't had as much time. I had one California client came back to me recently, and we went through about 8 weeks together of working through some of the things that client wanted help with, which was very mm-hmm. gratifying. It's always great to work with people that I know and that I have some sort of understanding of who they are and the kind of values they have and the character they have and the work they've done, because this particular client is somebody that has been in my circles for probably, 20 years. So mm-hmm. that was really, really a great collaboration, and I feel so proud and happy we've come to the end of whatever this particular need was. But I felt like I always do, and the reason that I even put out the shingle for KarenBerg.com or to try to become a life coach is because going on that piece of that person's journey for just even that little bit of time that they let me in and let me play an important role in that particular set of challenges or issues, is that what happens now at the end of it is that they say to me, you helped me, and I want to share with you what has happened as a consequence of the way that you helped me. And because of our unique history or our ability to communicate or our whatever that is that makes a life coach actually worthwhile to the client who chose them. And that, by the way, I believe is magic. I don't think it's something you can manufacture. It's just that some people open themselves up and you can open yourself up and you can be real and honest and give them what they need to see and hear in that section of their life. And I don't mean that as a critical way, in a critical way at all, because life coaching, our sessions are not critical at all. They're not either one of us saying, well, that's bad or that doesn't work or maybe you should look at this another way. No. It's never like that. It's life coaching is always very positive and very constructive, but part of that is that ability that a life coach brings to a client, just a real quick reflection on this, is that it's a way of being fully present and listening and hearing and feeding back to that person while you're with them. And because they're open to that reflection, if it's like you shooting the arrow, you shoot the arrow and it hits its intended target, because in that moment, the target is visible and the person who is asking you to shoot an arrow at that target into their life is receiving the arrow. And so I don't want to make it sound like it's criticism, but it's a kind of openness to say what you actually see and hear and feel from that person in that moment that they're sort of bearing their soul. And usually it's a positive thing, because what's really ironic to me is that what is sad to me about our human condition, and I alluded to some of this in the podcast earlier, is that when we go through our lives so often, all the negative mind chatter comes in, all the self-doubt and all the things that seem wrong, that hurt or that you're uncertain about, that bring uncertainty and fear and doubt, self-doubt and all those things, is that we are our own worst enemies. And so when we get somebody, when we allow somebody to come and speak truth and love the way they see it, the way they see it in us, it can be so incredibly uplifting and empowering, and it can make that person who's opened themselves up, to say, what do you see? What do you hear? What about this? What about that? And when you're just completely honest with them, they'll go, oh, I had forgotten that part about myself, or I'm so glad you reminded me about that part, because I sometimes am hard on myself on that part, or actually you brought up something I do think I'm good at, and you pointed out something that I did well, and that it fits with my self-image. That reminds me that I'm strong in that area and that I'm good. And that's and so I think it's not always easy to know exactly who you are and remember who you are in every situation and every circumstance in life. And some people can do it. Some people are gifted. But then there's a whole lot of people that, like me, I always include myself in that group, who are struggling to be their best selves and to understand who they are. And to, constantly be reflecting on what it means to be them and what it means to be, you know, human beings or be spiritual beings in these human bodies. So that's just me and my friends. We talk about our challenges and our fears and our, you know, our self-improvement projects and our things that we don't want to change. And we talk about our fights and our struggles and our things that we bump our heads on over and over again. And we talk about our empathy for others and our pain and compassion and all the things, you know, all the things that we get into when we talk about the human psyche and relationships and love and personal growth and personal philosophies and getting along as friends and as partners and as lovers and as parents and as children and as members of a greater body. You know, we always have these kind of conversations. And so anybody that, I don't know how we're going to wrap this conversation up today, but anybody that feels uncomfortable with that, doesn't really like to talk about these kind of things or hear us talk about them, you're not going to listen to this podcast. But for people who want to go on that journey and kind of follow the meandering that we did today, I mean, we started out with, I think Linda even said in her setup about, you know, part of this ability to live fully and be yourself and live your mission is getting past those points where you won't challenge yourself for fear of failure. So the opposite of living is failing to live.
I like that. The opposite, I'm writing this down, the opposite of living.
So I'm going to close on that because
I think I just said
something original. The opposite of living,
is,
I'm going to write this down, is failing to live.
Jesus.
Do you understand? In the context of what we were just talking about, you started out the whole thing by saying you cannot not challenge yourself because of your fears. So then I just kind of went back to that first thing that you said that I jotted down on my notes, and so I'm get feeding back. The opposite of living is failing to live.
I'm
going to keep that one too. I'm putting that in the Coach Karen stack.
Please, that I'm gonna keep that. I'm gonna mention it every time I open up my mouth because that's the truth. But we love you, and you are excellent life coach because what you talk about is life. Okay, you talk about life. People, they might not comment, they might not say, but we say a lot of things that they're going through. That's why we share and care. That's why we say we're not CNN. We don't have a structure. We don't have a main topic. We deal with all topics. We deal with all people. And this type of opening or the way that we do things is the honest and authentic way. We're very authentic. You are authentic. Everybody that holds the participator, come on. They are heartfelt, authentic people because I can't, I won't put out anyone that's not speaking the truth. I won't put out anyone that's not coming from their heart. The motto here is, you said people listen, they won't listen. I remember, you know, you have a lot of directors, y'all do this, do that. I said, I'm not doing none of that. This is my button, my time, my dime. I said, I give it to the community, and we share and we care. And whatever's out there to be shared, we're going to bring it within reason and respectfully, and we care. The main thing is that we care. You care because you're real. You come on. The things that you talk about is life. You know, you put yourself in there. You're not sitting all high up on your throne. A life coach is not a therapist. Someone said, Linda, you should be a psychiatrist. I said, no, I shouldn't. I said, because I'll be on the couch crying and they'd be talking to me. Okay, no, I don't want to go that route. I do what I do. But when you say life coach, you are really bringing in the life. You're not there to solve the problem. You're there to listen to it and tell your story. See, the only way you get a real story is tell your story. And that's what you do. You've opened me up. I'm kind of like, I don't like running naked in the neighborhood. But whenever you come on, we get into a different realm. So, but you are magnificent, one of the top, and I will always say that. And you are the best life coach because you speak on life And those things of sadness, marriages in and out and the workplace, don't you think people are going through that? They might not have enough courage to talk to anybody about it, but we're not going through this by ourselves. So I'll go back to each one teach one, and we can learn from a baby. But to you and that position, congratulations again. You have to work it out, but you're there from something other than you. You don't have to know the terminology. You don't have to know all the lingo. You're not there for that. Okay, you're there to restructure and to create a collaboration throughout that organization that's going to take them further. They already got slapped in the face with Susie Girl leaving with all the knowledge. Okay, that's a very selfish person. Okay, or same when you're in a workplace and people come in and they want you to train them. You should train them. If you didn't pay for that, but a lot of times people want you to show things. When you have a company or a structure like that, you have to bring your people in and really have them shadow. You shadow no matter where you go. I don't care if it's pushing cans or if it's making rocket ships fly. You have your people shadow. So that lets me know that you did the right thing. Whipped it back on her and said, we got to double up on this. Because I'm not there yet, and I don't want to misrepresent. Okay, use it that way. I remember when I started to Laverne, I had a classmate, and so, you know, we were talking about a thread or something. This young lady did not know me, because if she did, she wouldn't say what she said. And we were discussing something. So her attitude to me was, well, you're at Laverne now. You know what I told Professor Bond? I said, I know where I am, and I know how I got here. And I didn't get here by playing, and I'm not getting ready to have anybody play with me. And I was done with the dialogue. Do you hear me? Do you understand where I'm going? That was, what do you mean, where I am? Don't you think I've been many places that you probably can't even get in the door. But I did not feel like going that. I just told her I didn't play to get here, and I'm not getting ready to have nobody play with me in that order. And we got that stuff straight. That's the way I handle that diminishing or whatever, because I'm not in here about this, and you don't stop anything. You better view me as the sun, okay? And as I said, I don't allow anybody to bend my ray. And there's been many that try. That's part of my principles. That's part of, I don't want to stop. Somebody said, well, so-and-so is arrogant. No, go to the dictionary. Arrogant and confident have two different meanings. I said, but to a person who does not have confidence, they would see it as arrogant. Okay, and I shut up. So I've had to come through my life fighting for everything that I've ever got and fight for it. Wasn't given to me. I've learned how to get the story across in a nicer way. But you go up in there and you told that lady just right, I'm not doing your work for you. You can't handle it. She probably don't know how to do it because she's used to giving it to the one that left that was there 13 years doing everybody's work. That's why she took it all with her. But you're there for a reason, and it's not the reason you think it is. And once you come and get it done.
Thank you.
No, you're a connector. You're going to structure it out.
Well, you always help me, but I feel like we've gone over. It's an hour and 43 minutes now.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not going to be able put all this on the blog. I have to shorten the audio because it's going to be too long for most listeners. But I was taking notes, and we will pick this up again like we always do in the future.
Yes.
And there were several ideas for additional topics to spin out and explore on. And as always, I appreciate you. And I'll try to I'll line this up in words on the page later so that it kind of summarizes what kind of everything we touched. And I appreciate it. And thank you for sharing the time and the space to explore like we always do. I just I can't say how much I value these little sessions we do, because they're always good for me. I hope they're good for you, and I hope that someday if somebody's listening to them, they're good for
definitely.
Them, too.
Oh, definitely. It's like our pleasure. We are so grateful the relationship, the connection, the way we do things, because I tell persons, Professor Bray, we are not CNN, and we're not trying to be, okay? We share and we care. If there's one person that we have saved from jumping off the bridge, we have done our job, okay? And that's the way I take it. I've never been consistent with what I do, because that one person might need to hear a word. So I continue to do what I do. But in order to help or talk or speak, it helps me, because it keeps me balanced, so that I can help others rebalance. And that's what you're about. You're good for me, you know, but you're the life coach. You're the top of the line life coach, because you speak strictly about life. You're not there to pacify or tell anybody what to do, or like you say, you never come in a negative way. Sometimes you can get pretty strict, okay, or you can open up an eye pretty quick, but not all the time. And the stories that you tell, people want to hear the story. It's about the story. Our youth, we need to tell them stories. They're hurting out there. But I bet you they'll listen to the stories. So I believe in having storytellers. I had storytellers coming up in my era. That's why I stand like a redwood tree, because they told me them stories. Okay, I didn't want to hear them. But as I matured, I thought back on them. I never forgot them. So it helps me move through my past. You talk life. You do just what you say you are, and we are so appreciative that we can get together and you take out the time and do what we do. We love you, Professor Bray. Again, I'm going to say, you're not there to learn the lingo or to be the greatest scientist or technical person in the world. You're there to show them something. So I'm dying to find out what it was, okay? I'm dying.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Yeah,
stay tuned.
I want
I'll
you
bring
to
you
stay
back
tuned.
More stories.
And I'm going to leave you with this word. As my mentor, Dr. Akulikata, always say, suffer what there is to suffer and enjoy what there is to enjoy. And one thing about it, winter always turns into spring. Always. You never see spring going back to winter, right? So you can't go back. Once you're there, you slide at the slot, each one teach one. And so then you'll be saying, I got this whole darn department, and I don't understand nothing. You're not supposed to understand it. You're supposed to go get the person that can understand it. That's what your job is. And I'm going to close it out. We love you. Karen Bird. You can look at her website. Karen Bird. Life, is it KarenBird.com, correct? That's your website.
KarenBerg.com.
Okay. Go out there and enjoy
that
your day.
On the end.
Yes, in the rain, put on your galoshes and go say hello to my ducks. And on that end, we're going to call it Cross Country Connect with Life Coach Karen Barrett. It has been a pleasure. We
Thank
love
you.
You. And I like to extend time. I'll extend the time on you because we're talking to them about life. It's about each one, teach one here. All persons that are listening, I hope you took good notes. But these shows archive. Anytime you see Karen Burke, Life Coach, that button, okay, you can go in and they archive. Karen, we love you. Oh, and I'm going to let you go.
You
know, I get many requests on doing nothing. The art of doing nothing. People like Blue the Bear. Yeah.
Oh, that's
funny. Yeah, they like that. Anything that you bring us, but it's not what you bring. It's how you bring it. And we love you for that. Love you. Have a wonderful, wonderful week. Because I'll be calling you back at the end of the week. We don't want to have this space out too much. We need to find out the process and how this is going, and I'm going to be on top of you. I'll text you and get with you when you're available.
Hey, and let's do. And thanks for bringing up Blue the Bear, because you know what worked about that particular recording was that we've been doing an intro song, but that was our first outro song, and we used it as the end of the podcast to actually teach and reinforce the lesson that of the discussion that day. And so I'll think about that because I may be able to work in another cool song with some history like that one had. The Bare Necessities song from the Jungle Book. It might appeal to people like that one did for an era, which was a time gone by. But maybe there would be some other song like that that could fit just nicely, and we can get the public domain recording of it, because in this case I was able to, you know, get that one because it's older than 50 years old, and we were able to play it out without getting it shut down on the internet. Let me think about that. There might be another topic for another day where we can introduce people to a concept we can reinforce through some catchy song or some symbolic song from our past. That's a cool idea.
I do a lot of requests, and they'll come in. They just like that song. It's a good reminder song. It makes you think, like everything that you speak on and everything that you share with us and everything that you bring here makes us think. And that's what it's all about.
Yep.
Each one, each one. Yep. Pastor Bird, we love you. We're going to close it out.
Thank you
so much.
All right.
We love you.
All later. Righty.
Bye-bye.
Later. Bye-bye.
Later.
I never thought the sun would shine my way. All I've known is empty promises and pain. I need a way out, some type of escape. So I take refuge in this place. Even though the road to glory seems long, the fire in me could win a marathon. Believe in it, nothing you can't overcome. If you dream, then you can do anything.
And you can fly high with the strength of all your friends.
Lab Cross Country Connect, Live Your Mission, brought to us by Life Coach Karen Bird. Love you and keep this in mind.
Showing others how to live.
We care, share, we love.